Today's June 14th, 2026. Current Bitcoin price is $64,062.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
How's it going, Rick?
Not too bad. A little toasty.
Kind of before we got going today, we were talking about the big event at the White House today, huh?
Yeah.
Do you want
bread and circus, baby?
Bread and circus. Do you want to give a shout out to Trump for his 80th birthday?
Yeah, sure.
Happy 80th.
I can't believe we have an 80-year-old president right now. I mean, it didn't really work out well for us last time either. So.
No, it didn't.
Though he's, you know what? Trump's held it together a lot better than the previous one.
That is true. That is true. Yeah, he doesn't. I haven't seen Trump be like, I'm going for ice cream and just get excited as a school child.
Gosh, that was so creepy.
That was weird.
That was weird. It was. I don't know.
So we were. It was about a week and a half ago, I think we recorded. So there's been actually quite a bit. So we've got a lot of ground to cover today on the show. And it's funny because everything is so topsy-turvy. Like the biggest thing that Bitcoin, like narrative-wise, has just been kind of like the clarity information, like as that kind of continues to progress, which there really isn't much traction on that yet. We'll have to see once they kind of start discussing that. But everything else is kind of just macroeconomic, looking at all those different things, all those different metrics that are affecting markets as a whole. But what are our theoreticals looking like?
I see. Theoreticals. It's been kind of an interesting week and a half, you know, since we recorded. You know, previously we saw the sailor sell, and, you know, Bitcoin prices went basically down to 60,000. We recorded it when they were 62,906. And right now we've gone up another 1,000. So first theoretical purchase at October 2023, if you put down $3,000 of Bitcoin, you could have got 0.085 Bitcoin. And at that price, or at today's price, that $3,000 investment's worth $5,669. Nice.
Yeah, that one's still a good one.
buy number two was right at the halving. So the purchase happened when Bitcoin was at $64,000. And right now the Bitcoin at $64,062, your investment is worth $1,002. Congratulations, you're positive.
Well, I mean, I hate whenever that number goes below. Like we have pretty much stated several times that $3,000 purchase was just genius. That was great timing. The $1,000 one at the halving, typically that should be looking okay. That has not, that one just has been a sticking point.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it has been higher, but
it's all about the timing in the cycle. And the cycle really started, the rocket ship started for Bitcoin in that cycle, basically October 2023.
Yeah.
And I mean, it would even be better if you would have bought towards the beginning of October. I mean, not crazy better, but even a little bit better. But no, it was, I think that's when the theoreticals were confirmed, or not theoreticals, the ETFs were confirmed. And so that's kind of when things got heated.
Yeah, that's when we saw all those huge moves kind of take place. And then last time we recorded, the ETFs were just a bloodbath. They don't look a whole lot different now, but it seems like maybe we'll get some relief. We'll have to kind of see how this plays out, because we finally, we saw it was red. I mean, it was red pretty much all last time we recorded. Right now we had like one black on June 4th, but that wasn't really, it's 3.2 million. Like that's negligible. that's a rounding error. When we're looking at the numbers we're looking at,
especially when you look at 480, 400, 519 negative numbers, like right before it, you know, 400.
I mean, like,
okay, positive 3.2.
Hooray. Yeah. And then we got to the 12th. Looks like we got 85.9 million, which that's better. It's not by any means great, but it's better than what we've seen in a bit. So ETFs, maybe the bleeding has stopped. We'll have to kind of give it a little bit more time. We'll give it another week and see if we get to see more black and get rid of some of this red, because that red is nasty. Nasty. But there's also several factors that are going to lead into, you know, possibly more sell pressures when we keep on continuing through this. So just something to keep in mind. I mean, realistically, what are your thoughts? Like, did we see the final dump? Are we going to start to level out, or do you think we still have more room to go down?
You know, it's really difficult. Ever since the ETFs, things are not the same.
Yeah.
I mean, previous cycle, if we crossed down to 60, we're going down to 50. And this one, it hit 60, and it just would get bumped up, and kept alive long enough where it, now it's picking momentum up. I don't know. I still don't think we've seen the bottom of the market.
No, I don't think so either.
But if it can get anywhere in the neighborhood of 50, I mean, that's really the prime time to buy, but maybe 60 was it, you know? We'll see.
Yeah, because we got down to, and it looks like it was just for a moment, we got down to 59, it looks like 59,088, and that was on the 5th, but there was so much pressure right at that 60,000 level, like it didn't stay there very long, and we just rebounded back up. So, I don't know where, you know, I don't know where we're going to go next. I'm guessing... I don't know. There's some stuff we're going to talk about today that can definitely affect all of that. But one of the first things that we're going to bring up today was CPI. So we got the CPI print for May. We knew it was going to be hot, right?
Yes.
Especially, I mean, it's all a big part of that was the lead from the energy sector, like the energy shock from the stuff going on in Iran, which it feels like things are starting to trend down in oil prices. What is oil right now? Let me pull that up. Oil is sitting at $84 a barrel. So it's better than it was. But we're still not seeing that kind of coincide at the gas pump yet. So anyway, CPI came out. Headline CPI for May was an increase of 0.5%. And if you remember... April's price was already kind of higher. We already had trending inflation going back up. So CPI for May, headline CPI was 4.2% year over year. Core CPI, which is the one minus energy, is at 2.9% year over year. Energy, like this is the crazy one. So energy index, 3.9% increase month over month. And it's at 23.5% increase year over year. That's a big impact to the market. So, I mean, the inflation spike is driven obviously by everything that we have going on with the tensions of the Middle East. It's, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Like, do you think, I mean, we hear how many times now we've heard there's a peace deal. And we're hearing one again now. Do we believe it this time, or is it fake?
I don't think there's a peace deal. Well, here's the deal. Like, in the past couple of months, it's been like, one day he's saying it's going to be bridge and, you know, power day or something like that from, you know, President Trump from Truth Social. And then he doesn't do anything. It's just tough. It's just back and forth. Oh, we're negotiating with them. And then Iran says, we're not negotiating with them.
Yeah.
You know, like they keep calling his bluff. Like he's just full of bluster. And then on the other side, it seems like every time anything happens, you know, like any movement towards peace, I mean, we don't even mention that Israel is attacking Lebanon, trying to take a piece of that.
Yeah.
It's just so wild. Yeah, I mean, everything is just, and whatever, I don't know what's going on with Trump, but usually he would have pulled out. I know he wants to pull out, but for whatever reason, he can't.
No. I think, like, if he pulls out now without getting something concrete and some sort of a win, we're going to be right back to where we were in a year.
Dude, this conflict can stay at this weird stalemate for years and years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at Russia and Ukraine. Like, how many years is that now?
That's over three.
Yeah.
Right.
And there, I mean, it's, from what I understand, it's pretty much, I mean, Ukraine's made some good progress, but it's still just kind of at a stalemate. Like, there's no end to that coming up. I don't know. It's a mess. Sure. What were you going to say?
It just almost feels like all the geopolitical forces are just doing their proxy wars crap and then keep you stuck there forever if they have to.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the thing that kills me with that for Trump is that whatever capture I feel like the Republicans had, if they can't correct this soon, going in midterms, I think it's going to screw them.
Oh, no. It's going to be an absolute bloodbath if things continue as it is for the Republicans. And it's, you know, it's kind of weird watching his first presidency. They were just trying to impeach him over everything, and they were over nothing.
Yeah.
But this whole just attacking Iran out of nowhere, and then a lot of the shady stuff, the trades that have been happening, you know, that looks like somebody has insider information in the White House. They have a lot more to work with now.
Yes.
To say that.
And no,
if they take over both the House and the Senate, it's going to be a bad couple of years from there.
Oh, he'll be so lame duck, it won't matter. And for me, I think that's where I go back to, I really want to see the Clarity Act get passed. I mean, hopefully it's positive for the market, but if it doesn't get passed, we're going to go right back into the Democrats weaponizing, politicizing Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, where we're going to be under threat again.
And, you know, that is really unfortunate, too. I mean, I usually don't get political, but I thought Bitcoin was kind of non-political for the longest time.
Yeah.
And somewhere under, I think it really was under the Biden administration, Bitcoin became a political football. And then Democrats were anti-Bitcoin and Republicans were pro-Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been interesting, though, you know, but we do remember the days when it was kind of just like people looked at us like nothing. So apparently it's powerful enough where people are, you know, drawing lines against it, for and against it. So that's I guess we should have expected that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it's funny. I mean, we see it the same thing now with AI. I think the Democrats are really rallying against AI. There's a lot of things that it's just like, that's such a weird political ploy to pull, but anyways, I don't know. So I mean, do you think this is a one-off energy shock, or do you think we're going to continue to see the inflation wave based off these numbers now that we're seeing?
No, I think inflation is going to heat up.
Yeah.
I think it's going to heat up. Especially because I don't see the peace process working here. I think we're going to be bogged down in this thing for a long time. Thanks. And the concessions that Iran wants, we're not going to be able to give up without huge political ramifications. Because I'm pretty sure one of the concessions they want is us basically out of the Middle East.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think that's going to happen on our side. That's not going to be something. Not only that, I don't think we would want to tolerate, and I don't care what party you are. I don't think our allies in the Middle East would tolerate that either. Because, I mean, that's such a big infrastructure, like economically, like if we're not there, I talked about this, I think, in an episode a while back, but I think we actually are getting a lot of investments out of the Middle East into the AI infrastructure currently. And we all know the AI infrastructure, like that bubble, is what's keeping our economy kind of roaring. Well, and I won't say roaring, but it's keeping the stock market above 50,000, as it were.
Yeah. So,
stock market's above 50,000. Anyways, yeah. The other thing it'll be interesting to see, like, I think any interest rate cuts, I think, are going to be off the table for the remainder of the year because of this.
Yeah. So, no, I think inflation is going to just stay at whatever is happening now. And I think government's also going to, I don't know if people are going to be buying our bonds. And then at that point, at least for Americans, you know, we're going to just start printing money like crazy again.
Well, and I think that was part of the Genius Act was, I think I had talked about the pressure cooker and how we needed a way to be able to print more money while not affecting the technical dollar directly. And I think that's where the Clarity Act with the, or not the Clarity Act, but the Genius Act with the stable coins, I think that's their loophole. If countries don't want to buy our bonds, maybe they'll want to use our stable coins for trade, which are going to be backed by bonds.
Yeah. No, I think, that's kind of one of those interesting things that they could pull off. But the Democrats don't want to give Donald Trump an out. And the Republicans aren't really on board with moving the stuff forward. I mean, they could have moved. Honestly, they should be moving a lot of stuff forward because they know that their death is coming. So they'll just get some stuff through before you're dead. But they're not doing it. It's just, you know. I mean, there's a lot of seats that are going to be bye-bye,
yeah.
Gone.
Absolutely.
Forward, so.
I completely agree. I don't think you're wrong at all on that. But to kind of move on to some of the other stuff that I wanted to talk about today or that we needed to talk about today, question for you. I'm going to ask this as a kind of a pop quiz. When was the first billionaire in the United States created? Do you know?
It'd be back in the 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
And that'd be John D. Rockefeller?
Yep. It was 1916. John D. Rockefeller. And now, 110 years later, we have our first trillionaire. So first off, like, I was thinking about this the other day, just driving in the car. It's like, that is almost impossible to fathom. Like, can you imagine that? You have a trillion. I mean, it's not cash, right? But can you imagine being worth $1 trillion?
Now, but Elon Musk knows the feeling now.
He does indeed. So SpaceX IPO, and people may be wondering, why are we talking about a SpaceX IPO on the BitByte podcast? Well, you've been aware, I mean, SpaceX actually has held Bitcoin on their treasury for quite a long time. But SpaceX IPO pushes Musk's net worth to, I think it's like $1.18 trillion. I have a feeling that that guy is gonna, it's gonna be a couple trillion here pretty soon. So now, like, his wealth exceeds the entire altcoin market cap just in one man. SpaceX plus Tesla combined hold over 30,000 Bitcoin. And so, I mean, if his companies are sitting like in the top of the indexes and they hold treasuries of Bitcoin. I mean, we know Saylor, right? Like, and we'll talk about him here in a second, but we know Saylor Lay's strategy. Like, he's been making the Bitcoin playbook basically for treasury companies or for to hold Bitcoin for these big market movers. And if SpaceX and Tesla are doing it, and they're in the top, do you think other companies will start to follow more suit, like where Bitcoin becomes a treasury reserve asset?
No, not anytime. What I expect out of Elon Musk is him to basically maybe keep his position. I don't know if he's going to sell, but I just expect him to troll us a little bit with another Dogecoin pump, probably.
He tweeted about it the other day again with Doge and McDonald's. Because I think he had done it a while back whenever he first kind of started trolling everybody with the Dogecoin. And he tweeted something at McDonald's again that they need to start accepting Doge for purchases at McDonald's. But I don't know. It's kind of crazy to see. I don't know. I go back and forth where I'm like, $1 trillion being worth that much money. And then how long will it be before somebody else follows suit? I think it's going to be hard for some of those folks to get there. I know it is going to happen. But he's got so many, you know, irons in the fire that it's like, of course it was going to happen.
Well, for him, I mean, he's got just what he started is like a multi-headed hydra.
Yeah.
Of crazy companies. And even looking what, you know, he did before, he almost went bankrupt with Tesla. With each step, he kept going. And look where he's at now, $1 trillion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because, okay, what we've got SpaceX, we've got Tesla, we've got Neuralink, we've got Boring Company and Solar City. What else am I missing here?
Well, SpaceX, of course, now.
SpaceX. He's got, I mean, let alone like typically
open AI.
Yeah, that's true. He did start OpenAI. He was one of the original founders, like in the original founding round. And then
now he has Twitter/X.
Yeah. Oh yeah. X. I forgot about X. Jesus, that guy. I mean, good for him. I am glad that like he is truly the American story, right? Like he's an immigrant, came here, and people that, you know, he rolled the dice. And I don't know, it's hard to say, you know, when you hear about the history of him, because I read his autobiography. I don't know how much money he had when he came here. I don't think he was poor, but I don't think necessarily he was rich. But man, it was basically like, and I can't remember what it was. I want to say it was Zipdial, and then it rolled into PayPal. And then after PayPal, then it rolled into Tesla and SpaceX and all that other stuff. So it's like, he's just been kind of doubling down every time. And he takes big risks.
That's really what it is. And then they've ended up paying off.
Yeah. Yeah. He has, I mean, regardless of what people think about him, he has some sort of innate ability to take his vision, get people to believe his vision and work tirelessly to achieve it. There's something about his team creation that's just unmatched.
Yeah. Well, it seems like he can separate the wheat from the chaff with people too.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think by any means, I have no illusions that he's a nice boss.
Well, he can't put any worse than Steve Jobs.
Well, and I don't know, there's something about that whole, and I don't know if it's attitude or approach to business, but I heard something the other day, and I know we're kind of off topic here, but I heard something the other day with Steve Jobs where Steve Jobs would ask you a question, a personal question, like whenever you're going through interviews and stuff like that. To find out information about you and your family. And then he would bring that up. Like if you failed at something, he would like say you were like, oh yeah, no, I was raised by a single mother who worked tirelessly to raise me, whatever the case may be. If you failed, like, or if he thought you failed in a presentation or in some sort of a pitch, he would bring that up and be like, do you think your mother sacrificed all that for you to be a loser today? You know, he was mean, ruthless. But I mean, he got results.
I was going to say, the results speak for themselves. So, I mean, maybe roasting in hell, but right now he's bathing in a $1 trillion swimming pool. So,
yeah. You know, going off of that, I think that's big news for treasury companies, especially with Bitcoin, but Bitcoin mining difficulty has actually had a drop too. It's dropped 10%. So this is the second largest decline of 2026. Difficulty fell 10.09%. Signals minor stress from prices softness plus energy curtailments. So some of the miners, and I think we talked about this before, they're shifting some of that workload to AI rather than just hashing out Bitcoin. So it could redistribute the network. We'll have to kind of see how that plays out. And especially those that are trading as public companies, they've got to be able to show that they're profitable. They can't continue to just mine when energy costs are so high that it's offsetting. So I don't know. What do you think will happen with that? Do you think those companies that actually formed on the public markets, do you think they'll fail because of this?
I mean, I think just how that, you know, the stock market is structured. And like you said, you have to create value for the shareholders, right?
Yeah.
And every thing is mining Bitcoin is a rough business because we know that, you know, 1 year is winter, 1 year we're kind of getting some relief. Okay, maybe spring and then summer, fall, and then back to winter.
Mm-hmm.
And that 4 year cycle is held. I mean, it's not as brutal as it was before. I mean, could you imagine if Bitcoin was down to like $50,000?
No, man.
There'd probably be a lot of mining companies that'd be going belly up right now. So,
yeah, and I'd imagine their headcount isn't that large. So, I mean, what they have to do is just shut down miners.
Right. So I do think I wouldn't invest in mining companies except maybe that towards the end of this year if they survive, because then they're going to be doing all right. But right now, it's going to be rough. It's going to be a rough year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think it's just kind of interesting to see one of the things, a narrative within Bitcoin that's very common is that price follows hash rate. And if hash rate is going down, and it's consistently been going down this year, then I don't know. I mean, obviously price is where it is. We're down 50% from the high basically. So yeah, it's kind of crazy to see what's happening with that, with the mining difficulty. But, last time we recorded, Saylor was our big news. He'd sold, and I can't even remember what it was now. Was it like 32 Bitcoin, which was like nothing in comparison to what he owned, but like people like freaked, like the markets freaked because his whole thesis of never sell. Well, looks like Saylor was back at the table buying Bitcoin. So he added 1,550 Bitcoin this last week, and they now actually are holding 1 billion in cash reserves. So he continues to be kind of that diehard. Like, I mean, regardless of what people thought of the sale, there was something where I saw he was trying to prove the liquidity of it. Like, you know, yes, if we need to sell, we can. And we saw something similar with Tesla, I think with their Bitcoin holdings, like not SpaceX itself, but Tesla actually sold some of their Bitcoin that they had in the treasury that first year they were holding just to prove that they could turn into cash if needed. So I don't know how true that is. Go ahead.
I have to say, though, I did call that.
Yeah.
I did call that last time. He's like, yeah, he sold 32 Bitcoin. People are going to panic. And then when the panic sets in, he's going to be loading up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, and we've talked about this, I think, a little bit before, but I mean, is MicroStrategy or Strategy becoming like the, basically like the de facto unofficial Bitcoin central bank?
In a way, yeah, they will be. I mean, we believe in Bitcoin. We do think Bitcoin is going places. I mean, 64,000, we're like kind of bummed about that. I mean, just think about that, you know, 10 years ago. If we've been like, oh man, Bitcoin's down a half, it's only $64,000, we'd be like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, if you would have told me like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I'd be like, we'd be in a crypto winter or, you know, sometime in the bulls or the bear cycle at 64,000. I'd be like, damn, still doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think that Saylor buying like this, do you think it's, He's a bellwether, and we were talking about this. Is he a bellwether for institutional confidence in Bitcoin, or do you think it's just Saylor's confidence in Bitcoin?
Right now, I think it's just Saylor's confidence. Though, I really do. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the financial institutions are resisting, but there's a lot of things going on in the market. Things are going to get tough all around, and I really do think, at the end of the day, Bitcoin may be one of the few safe havens next year.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I agree. And kind of going off of that, we know we have a ghost from Bitcoin's past that is starting to rear its head. I think we started to hear murmurs about it last episode. that we had recorded, but this is something, and this is one of those, this is dogged Bitcoin basically since 2014. And this is Mt. Gox. This is one of the first major exchanges for Bitcoin in the early days.
The early days. Well, it was Mt. Gox stands for Magic the Gathering Online Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So it was people selling magic cards, and then Mt. Gox got in the game of purchasing Bitcoin.
And they did nothing secure.
Nope. And that was their problem, right?
Yeah, it was such the early days, like he had this, I don't know, this chud of a guy. And I hate to be disparaging against him because I'm probably a chud of a guy too, but he had this chud of a guy like just buying and selling Bitcoin for folks. He saw a great opportunity. He just didn't take the precautions to secure it the way he should. So there's a pre-2014 wallet, which moved around 10,422 Bitcoin. And this always comes up in Bitcoin's history from time to time, where you've got this fear based off this wallet. And it has been an ongoing narrative within the Bitcoin space. Every couple of years, it raises its head, causes fear in the market. So it's like, is this going to be forced selling 10,000 Bitcoin? That's quite a bit. And it always creates short-term volatility every time this happens. And when I say volatility, it's typically to the downside. But it's not a long-term thing. It's just, do you think we're finally seeing the end of this Mt. Gox boogeyman?
No. No. I mean, it's almost like lore now. It's not even history. It's lore within the Bitcoin space. So, no, it's not going to go away anytime soon.
Why do you think the market always reacts to this so negatively?
I don't know. Bitcoin holders are a weird group of people, Hans. You know, and the people that we tend to accumulate as far as, you know, people that kind of, you know, believe in Bitcoin or whatever. It's a bunch of weirdos. And until like something drastic happens, that's going to be how it's going to be for a while. So when Bitcoin's further adopted, none of this stuff is going to matter.
Yeah. I
feel that.
Man, I really do want to see Mt. Gox just like be done and just let it at that point, just let it become a fable. Like, I'm so sick of hearing about it. I've been hearing about it for years and years and years and years. And you know what? Every single time it comes up, price gets suppressed, and then nothing really happens with it.
Right.
I mean, I think in some ways it has done, the people that are actually going to get some of their money back from Mt. Gox, it's good that they're going to. But if it wasn't for Mt. Gox and them having this, basically their coins locked up for so long with all these proceedings of the court, and the lawsuit and everything else that was going on with it, these people probably would have sold out a long time ago. And now they've been forced to sit and wait until Bitcoin's $64,000. And they probably have quite a few coins tied up in this whole thing.
Well, and it was in 2014, you said?
Yeah, it was pre-2014 when that wallet kind of emerged. I think that's probably around the collapse when it happened. Was 2014, and that was huge. That was the end of the bull market for that cycle when that was going on, which would have been like the first big cycle for Bitcoin.
Yeah, that was the base of the first cycle then.
Yeah. And it just keeps on popping up every few years. And it's like, I'm ready for it to be done. I'm ready for the sell-off to be done, courts to be settled, whatever the case may be. People either get their Bitcoin and they sell off, or they're going to hold it longer. They've gone this long.
They've been held against their will this long.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it's benefited them. They would have sold out probably a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They would have definitely probably been selling at the 20,000 level. So, I don't know. And I mean, at this point, if you've already seen it get to 120, you've held out this long, you know, like, especially because if you watch this market for that long, you're not going to sell your entire position at 64. You may get a little bit out of it, just be like, oh, yeah, thank God, I'm going to get some cash. But you're gonna be like, dude, I'm not gonna sell all my coin. Would you?
Well, how financially savvy were the Mt. Gox people?
Probably not very. So these were people buying, like, it was Magic the Gathering.
Online. Exactly. It was Magic the Gathering. So I'm not saying they're dumb. They're just like, they're a different type of nerd. They're not quite Bitcoin nerds. You know what I mean? Maybe they became one in that preceding 12 years, but I don't know. I think we are, if somehow people get this money, there's going to be a lot of selling and there's going to be a few people that hold on, but we'll see.
We will. We will. Last thing's kind of close us out. We did get a jobs report. So it was a strong headline, but really kind of weak once you kind of started to dig into it. So they were saying 172,000 jobs added, which was above what they were believing it was going to be. Gains concentrated in government, which I hate seeing that. Healthcare and hospitality. Again, healthcare is the only one that kind of should stand on its own. Hospitality, okay. Like, that doesn't pay very well. Government,
no.
Whatever. I don't want to see the government expanding. So tech and finance saw job losses, which is very concerning because those are high earners. I don't know. It basically, what it comes down to is it's going to reduce the near term of Fed easing interest rates, because we've already talked about that. Like, inflation's going through the roof again. Jobs are, I mean, it was okay. At least it was a positive number. But we had, what was it, just a little bit ago, again, another million job rounding error that they keep on talking about. I don't know. Do you think the labor market's actually getting strong, or is it just distorted?
It's pretty distorted, in my opinion.
No, I agree.
Especially when they count government jobs in this, they're not actually doing any production per se. I mean, I'm not saying government workers are useless, but if that's where most of our jobs are coming from, that means that the general economy is not doing that well.
No. No, I mean, and something to think about, like, they always talk about, like, you know, I've had this discussion with people, you know, and how the government creates jobs. No, the government can create the environment for jobs if it's done well. But the government itself should not be creating jobs. If we all work for the government, that doesn't do us any good. And I mean, the Dems are going to beat on this like a drum, like, oh, you know, we can create more government jobs. It's like, the problem is this, like, when you look at that, okay, so SpaceX IPO just happened. Elon Musk made 4,400 millionaires with the IPO. I mean, has AOC done that? No. Has Elizabeth Warren done that? No. Like, that's free market capitalism at work. Well, and it's not necessarily free market capitalism because we have so many restrictions in place, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of government contracts involved with SpaceX too.
There. Touche. Kudos. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I don't know. That's
not, but yeah, I mean, if anything else, especially like democratic thinking, like you look at what's happened on the West Coast. Specifically, like, you know, with the minimum wage that they're hiking up to like $25 an hour and all this other stuff, there's a lot of people that have lost their jobs.
Yeah.
I remember Amazon was going to do something in Brooklyn, and AOC railed against it and just like chased it out.
Yeah.
And that was like thousands of jobs. And so, I mean, I'm not saying that Amazon's the greatest company ever, but
just job creation.
Some jobs are better than no jobs, and that's exactly what, you know, Manhattan, or I don't remember if it was Brooklyn, it was one of the boroughs in New York City, they lost out on thousands of jobs. Yeah. So
yeah, and I mean, I don't know, it's interesting because you got Mondami in New York, and then you've got the douche in California. And California, like, as for all their bluster, like, yeah, I mean, they've got Silicon Valley. And I think that's like one of the biggest reasons why California does as good as they do. It's just such a train wreck on both ends of those both of our coasts, basically, is what I feel like.
Agreed.
We'll have to kind of see how that plays out. But that's pretty much all I have for this episode. I think there was quite a bit that we covered there. A lot of stuff going on in the world markets and Bitcoin in general. Like the Bitcoin itself right now is a bystander. I mean, hopefully Clarity Act, like that's my big hope. And one thing I do want to ask is that if anybody's out there that's listening, join us on Twitter and just send us a question, or on X, I should say. God, I'm going to call it Twitter for the rest of my life. Join us on X. And if you want us to answer a question, just bring it up. We'll answer your question on here. Thank you all for listening. You have a great day, and we will talk to y'all soon.